This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On this episode of the Heat Check, we're rolling through the first week of the playoffs, and goddamn, after a weekend of stinkers, did we end up with two of the best playoff games in recent memory, actually, right? To catch us up on the latest news, we bring on the great Keith Smith from Spotrek, as well as my guy Anthony Irwin from the Lakers Lounge to break all things down. LA, tough loss for the Lakers. We'll get right into it, Anthony. You national radio man, you drop that motherfucking beat that should be Rihanna. First week of the playoffs are upon us. There's a fascinating thing happening, actually. The home teams right now are winning at an alarming rate. 11-0 in the first 3 days, and although it took some shenanigans to make this happen, it happened nonetheless. The entire basketball world was entranced by the first two close games of the playoffs, and both ended in what can only be described as insanity, a doozy. We will start at MSG. The Sixers got Joel Embiid back after the scary fall in game one. And folks, I think there's something wrong with Joel Embiid. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not just his knee. There's something wrong with his fucking eye. I don't know. Does anybody else see what I'm seeing? It's twitching. It's closing strangely. It looks very, like, droopy. It looks like there's some nerve situation going on with the side of his face. I don't know what it is. I'm not a doctor. Spike Eskin tweeted about it. A ton of Sixers bloggers did. Radio personalities did. What's wrong? I don't know. He did break an orbital bone a while back. Maybe there's some sort of nerve damage there. But it's more concerning almost than the knee. Maybe it's the drugs from the knee. Don't know. Anyway, we'll fast forward to the end of the Sixers-Knicks game. The initial part of the game, most of the game, kind of cheeks. Kind of like not great. It was 101-99 with 27 seconds to go, so not a lot of offense. The ball was inbounded to Maxey. By the way, Jalen Brunson was terrible. Hit a very clutch three to make it 101-99. Ball inbounded to Maxey, and that's when the shit hit the fan, really. Like a rugby scrum broke out. Ball bounced around like a pinball. Ended up with Dante DiVincenzo missing a three. Hartenstein getting the rebound, getting it back to Dante DiVincenzo to hit the three with 13 seconds left, and the Knicks had an improbable comeback from behind win when the Sixers were up 4 points with a minute to go. There's a lot of scuttlebutt about it. Nick Nurse said he tried to call a timeout multiple times. Didn't get the refs to call a timeout. That's why you run to the middle of the court like a fucking woman that's ready to stick herself with glue to the basketball court, protesting some sort of, like, animal rights issue. That's what you should do, Nick Nurse. Call timeout on the middle of the floor. How crazy was it? A lot of scuttlebutt about whether Tyrese Maxey got fouled on that inbound play. Turns out, little NBA's last 2 minutes came out, and there was not one, but two fouls on Maxey on the play. And before that, the ball was turned over. Nick Nurse should have been given a timeout. Terrible stuff. Terrible stuff for the NBA. You cannot fuck these big moments up more than that. Unless you're an MLB umpire, no one on earth fucks up like that who isn't taking a suitcase of cash, let's be honest, like a little Jonte Porter on there. Now that the Sixers are down 0-2 going home after a pair of games they should have won, Joel Embiid does something that he never does. He promised us that the Sixers would win that series, so what did I do? I believed him. And I took the Sixers to win the series at plus 400. To be fair, though, it's not really far-fetched. The Knicks are getting bailed out by Miles McBride, Deuce, and Josh Hart. Josh Hart's not exactly like a great three-point shooter, and he's just bombing away like he's Steph Curry. You just cannot see those guys giving you four wins, especially with Jalen Brunson getting absolutely strapped by multiple 6-7 players and above. But as wild as the Sixers game was, it was nothing compared to what we saw out in Denver, where the Lakers played a nearly perfect game against the Nuggets and still somehow, some way, got their hearts ripped out at elevation. Up 20 in the second half, the Nuggets did the thing that they do, was when you are up on the Nuggets, there is no lead that is safe. You go to the kitchen to grab a water and come back somehow, Denver's only down 4. Denver came back all the way, and the lead swapped in the final 2 minutes until LeBron James, who was insanely good, he missed a wide open 3 with 12 seconds to go. Why did he do that with only like 10 seconds left on the shot clock? Who the fuck knows? Terrible. Jamal Murray takes the ball up the court. Jamal was 3 for 16 to start the game, but he was cooking during crunch time. By the way, Anthony Davis was on a milk carton. He loudly proclaimed himself the defensive player of the year, and he had a foot of height on Jamal Murray, and it was just a tough bucket over a tough defender. Jamal hit a fadeaway 15-footer, night-night sleep mask. Unreal. The Nuggets not only are inevitable, but the Lakers, I just don't understand what they were doing down the stretch. I don't understand why they can't just do what they were doing in the first three quarters. Why Anthony Davis goes from 42% usage rate to 5% usage rate, as Anthony Irwin so adeptly pointed out on my show last night. If you build a 20-point lead and you can't keep it, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Jokic looked terrible. Every bucket that he would normally splash couldn't go in. Jamal Murray, ball couldn't go in. KCP, ball couldn't go in. It was just Michael Porter Jr. Jokic was outplayed by AD most of the game. It was just, didn't matter. Michael Porter Jr. shot the lights out. Christian Braun had a 10 off the bench. Jokic still managed to be big into crunch time. I don't know what else to say except for the fact that the Lakers are going to get swept by the Nuggets. They're the best team in the NBA. They're the defending champs. The Lakers might be the second best team in the West. And guess what? It doesn't matter when you play the first game, first best team in the West in the first round. So I don't really know what to say. So me and my co-host Ryan Horvath had Lakers insider and Heat Check producer Anthony Irwin on to break down this on my other show, BetMGM Tonight, which airs on the radio, by the way, 7 to 11 Eastern in most major markets and live on Twitch, YouTube, and Odyssey. As host of the Lakers Lounge, Anthony has a bird's eye view of what happened. So let's go right into our interview with Anthony Irwin.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's talk some Lakers basketball. Anthony Irwin joins us right now, Lakers insider, LakersDaily.com. Thanks so much for joining us, man. So we were talking about this to start the show. You can't play much better than Los Angeles did last night. Great game for Anthony Davis, especially the first three quarters. They still lose. Now they go back home down 2-0 in that series. Any chance that they take game three? What do they need to do differently? It's a tough question because I thought that they played pretty damn well. It's just Jamal Murray went nuclear in the fourth quarter last night.
Yeah, I think the key to the game will be playing, like, the game gets shortened to 44 minutes instead of 48. If they could somehow work that out with the league, you know, I like their chances there. I mean, reality is, you watch that game. I rewatched it today. And you watch LeBron, he seems to have faith that they could win it. You watch AD, little less faith that they could win it down the stretch there. You watch the other guys, outside of maybe Austin, and everybody there was waiting for the inevitable. And you know, you look at the Nuggets and all of those guys, especially that five-man lineup, which for my money is the best lineup in the league. Those guys have the utmost belief that if they just keep they stick by their game, they stick by their principles, eventually they're going to wear down whoever it is that they're playing, but especially this Lakers team because they are so undisciplined. And they're going to climb back into it. And so I don't know that there is anything that the Lakers can actually do other than, you know, just win. That's what it really kind of comes down to. You just have to take care of business eventually. Or wait for Jokic to retire.
Yeah. Or wait for Jokic to retire. That's key. So I'm thinking about AD because in the fourth quarter, just one rebound, no crucial defensive stops, no blocks, no steals. Not a made basket, so just disappeared, put on a milk carton. What should we make of that? Is that more of the same stereotype that we have of Anthony Davis, or was there maybe altitude fatigue or early foul trouble or LeBron just deciding that he wants to take over and Anthony Davis not getting the ball?
Here's an interesting stat. This is from Vinay Killam from Twitter. Here's the LeBron and AD's usage rates over the course of the game. Quarter one, LeBron has a 15% usage rate. AD has a 27% usage rate. Lakers take the lead in quarter one, right? Quarter two, LeBron has a 26% usage rate. AD has 44%. Quarter three, LeBron has a 26%. AD has a 45% usage rate. And then in quarter four, LeBron jumps up to a 45, and AD has a 5% usage rate. That is just that's Chris Mim. That is, you know, Brian Cook. That is you know, Chris Duhon. You know, those are the types of players who, like, you never wanted to see have the basketball. That's Anthony Davis, and the Lakers have done that all year, where 80 will have it going. He'll have 35 or so in the first three quarters or so. And then all of a sudden you look up and he hasn't touched the ball in like 15 minutes. And they've done it all year. Some of it is on coaching. Some of it is on the knuckleheads who play with AD in those stretches. But also part of it is on AD, you know. You look at every great big man in league history, and they all have stories about the times that they shoved a point guard in a locker for not getting them the ball often enough. And AD just never really has that fire. You never see him get into a point guard or anybody on the court for not getting him the ball. And the Lakers really need that, you know, and I think it really puts a cap on what he can do throughout some of these tougher games.
How do you fix that? Like, do you think that gets fixed through the course of the series based on what you've already seen? Nobody's more plugged in and more locked in on what this team likes to do and their tendencies than you are.
Yeah, I think it would have been nice if LeBron and AD weren't on clutch together, because I think you would have gotten a LeBron subtweet by now. You know, like, where is this guy going? You know, it's hard to get somebody to completely rewire themselves in between games two and three in a series, because this is the same story that we've seen here. The only time we didn't see that from Anthony Davis was when the Lakers beat the Nuggets in 2020 in the bubble, you know, and he had some outlier shooting performances in that thing. And I'm not here to say that there's an asterisk on that. Obviously, it would completely end my Lakers coverage career if I did anything like that. But, you know, there's some interesting stuff that went on there that hasn't gone on for the rest of AD's career here. And, you know, in last night's game, he was 14 of 15 at one point in that game. A lot of jumpers going in, looked super confident, missed a couple jumpers, and then stopped shooting. And you know, for AD, if he isn't knocking down the jumper against Jokic, he's really kind of screwed, because it's not like he's going to out-physical Jokic. That guy wrestles horses.
Yeah, since we only got like 6 minutes left in the interview, I wanted to ask you a loaded question. I wanted to get your thoughts on Darvin Ham and the coaching job that he's done, especially here.
He's got stuff.
These first two games. And then have we seen the last of like the Spencer Dinwiddie experiment? I know he only played 10 minutes, but he was a -9, and he was brutal, and I think that probably needs to end now.
Yeah, they got to choose between Gabe and Spencer. You know, last night Austin Reeves plays 33 minutes, and I think he was like a +5 in those 33 minutes. You had Gabe Vincent and Spencer Dinwiddie combined for 25 minutes, 0 points. Like it was almost the Tony Snell meme, right?
Yeah,
where those two guys combined for the Tony Snell meme. You know, I think they're going to have to choose between one of those two guys. We've already seen Darvin eliminate Cam from the rotation now. Cam is hurt, but you know, every time Cam gets a DNP, he seems to be hurt the very next game, and I think that's some of what we're seeing going on now. Darvin, so I've been asking around the last few weeks, and the Lakers have been playing actually pretty good basketball over that time, and I would ask, hey, this guy, you know, the Lakers are barely going to make it into the play-in here. They are going to have to fight to get into the playoffs. And because of how this all plays out, they're probably looking at a first-round exit. There's no way you can go from the Western Conference Finals last year, have LeBron and AD healthy as long as you've had them healthy this year, and then, you know, be out in the first round, potentially via sweep again. That guy can't possibly be back, right? And everybody that I've spoken to, well, the vast majority of everybody that I've spoken to, have all said, yeah, you would think, but, you know, and it's like it's Jeannie and it's Rob, and they're so isolated, they're so insulated from this analysis that, you know, if Rob fires Ham, if Rob Pelinka fires Ham, that's admitting, yeah, I screwed up that hire. You're 2 years in, and you have 2 years left on your contract. Sorry, Jeannie, can you go out and hire another head coach? Oh, by the way, those head coaches, because they would have to hire an experienced head coach, those head coaches are now going for like $10 million per compared to Darvin's $4 million. And you're going to have to be on the hook for both. We know that Jeannie Buss, you know, it does not operate with the same type of wallet that, say, Steve Ballmer does. Ballmer would have fired Darvin like midseason. I have no doubt in my mind that Ballmer would have gotten rid of him midseason when he refused to play the Lakers' best five players. But Jeannie and Rob stuck with him. And now he is in the series and is clearly outmatched again. Logic points to this guy getting fired. I still believe in my heart of hearts that he's going to get fired, but it isn't like the slam dunk decision as it stands right now that I think Lakers fans would love it to be.
Well, especially considering that if you're an outside person, you're saying, well, the Lakers could potentially be the second best team in the West. They just happen to not get their stuff together and face a team that's like the UConn of the NBA. Bad draw. Let's just try to get closer to the top of the board next year, and maybe we can face the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals again. What players do you think in this matchup for the Lakers have the best and worst matchups in terms of, like, if we wanted to bet player props?
Ooh, player props is different from the direction I was going to take it.
You can just take it from LeBron, a basketball perspective as well.
Yeah, well, I think LeBron goes off, right? We saw him last year when the season was on the line to try to avoid the sweep. He played 47 and a half minutes in that game. He recognizes that you can't lose game three and have even a puncher's chance at winning this thing. So I think he probably really gets it together. I think Austin Reeves. Now, it's tough with Austin because he's guarding Jamal Murray. Same like it's really tough with Rui to get a gauge on what they can do offensively because both of those guys are doing so much defensively. I think they have no legs left over for the other side of the ball. I think that's really affected what the Lakers are able to do there. D'Lo is kind of, you know, he's really hit or miss. And at home, he has performed really well. He played really well in the first half of this last game. And so if you know, I don't know what his over-unders on threes currently stand. I would probably say that that's a pretty good look there is D'Angelo Russell's threes are an interesting play here. I'd probably go the over there. I would probably go the over there on D'Lo's threes. He's going to get them up, right? That was the thing in game one even is it's not that he stopped shooting. I was begging him to stop shooting, but he wouldn't stop. And in game two, he knocked him down. Game three, he should have some confidence going into it again. So, and they don't have Bruce Brown. They don't have that kind of a defender to kind of terrorize him. So I think D'Lo and LeBron are probably the two surest bets here for if you want to bet overs on props.
All right, before we let you run, what's your prediction? Nuggets in how many?
Two.
Nuggets in two.
This thing's over. Yeah, it's
LeBron.
This has been over. It's over. Like, maybe you'll get the gentleman sweep, but I really think that last game was the one to win. You had Anthony Davis outplaying Jokic in the first half. Like, it's not that. In the first game, I was thrilled because he went toe-to-toe with him. In the second one, he outplayed Jokic for most of the game. And it didn't matter. You had Jamal Murray not able to throw a pea in the ocean. And then he knocks down, you know, one of the biggest shots in Nuggets history. And so on and so forth there. So Michael Porter Jr. was just, he barely touched earth throughout that game. I just, you know, the Lakers, again, it comes down to belief. And I don't know that there's necessarily belief throughout that roster that they can beat the Nuggets. And it really showed down the stretch of that game.
Anthony, thanks so much, man. Enjoy the rest of the series. Talk again
thanks,
soon.
Thanks, Stu.
Hey, thanks, guys.
See you soon.
Anthony Irwin, you can check him out. Lakers Insider, LakersDaily.com. Does he? Wait,
yeah.
What?
He produces my podcast.
Like, here?
The Heat Chick. Yeah, here.
Oh, wow.
Does he, from Los Angeles, he does it?
He's in Austin, so he cuts it up, edits it.
Wow. How about that?
You ready?
Showtime. On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
We also end this episode with the great Keith Smith of Spotrac, who broke down all of the news from around the playoffs. He also joined me and my co-host Nick Ashew on BetMGM tonight. He added a lot of details on what the Orlando Magic are going to do in their offseason when they inevitably get swept to the Cleveland Cavaliers as well. As always, Keith is the absolute best. Let's get into that interview.
Keith Smith jumps on with us, Spotrac, and let's look at this Knicks-Sixers game right now, Keith. We got Tyrese Maxey, was supposed to be missed shoot-around, illness, he's out there, shot the ball well to start the game. Joel Embiid, I just mentioned, 12.7 rebounds. Right now, everybody looks kind of healthy, I guess, right?
Yeah, they do. They're doing their thing out there. Now, the thing with Embiid is, how long is it going to last? Mm-hmm. Is he going to make it to the end of the game? Is he going to be feeling good when it gets to the end of the game? We'll see. We don't really have any details on what kind of illness Maxey's dealing with, but is it something that's going to sap him of energy? So if you're the Knicks, just weather the storm, try to keep it close, and see if those guys run out of gas as the game goes along.
What do you think about the coaching battle between Tibbs and Nick Nurse? Because I feel like this is one of the more elite matchups in terms of just coaching chops and acumen, and you saw there was a lot of different styles that we saw in game one in terms of some of the adjustments that they had to make.
Yeah, Nick Nurse is going to do all kinds of different stuff throughout the course of these playoffs, especially on offense. Defense, he's a bit more limited because, and he said it himself, they can't ask him to do a lot of different things right now. But you see when Paul Reed comes in, they're playing almost this kind of matchup zone type defense where it's designed really to keep Jalen Brunson under control. The Knicks are... they're not getting super creative, but what they're doing is execute, execute, execute. Do what we do, do it at a very high level. But I thought Tibbs made a couple interesting rotation choices in game one. Deuce McBride had it going, so he rolled with him a little bit longer than he would have normally. And then Mitchell Robinson got the call over Isaiah Hartenstein late in the game because he was playing so well. So I think that's a sign from Tibbs where he's not going to change a lot schematically, but he did change up personnel, which was good to see.
From what you've seen so far for essentially the five quarters in this Knicks-Sixers series, what's kind of your lean in how this series is going to go?
Yeah, I thought it'd be a long series to begin with, and I think if Embiid cannot finish games strong, which I have some doubts he's going to be able to, I do think the Knicks will ultimately win the series, but I think this is still going to be a seven-game series. I think Philadelphia will play really well at home. I think that'll give them a lift. If they could get one of these first two in New York, that'd be absolutely huge because that's a good home crowd for them in Philly, and that should help them get a little bit of a bump. We know role players generally play better at home than they do on the road in the NBA playoffs. So I think Philly has a real chance here. If Embiid was healthy, I'd like them a lot more, just given some of the Knicks' injuries. But I just don't trust that he's going to be able to make it all the way through games as a productive, high-level, you know, to his standards kind of guy.
Yeah, right now, Knicks minus 320 to win the series, Sixers plus 250 to win the series. And I think they were pretty evenly matched before game one. You're in Orlando, and I think out of all the Game 1 winners, not many people are talking about how good Cleveland is playing defensively. I think we just saw that they were, what, 2 for 13 from 3, Orlando, earlier on in this game. What do you see their ceiling as, and how much of that is just the lack of shooting that Orlando naturally has versus what we're seeing from their schemes defensively with J.B. Bickerstaff?
Yeah, I think Cleveland did a nice job kind of building the proverbial wall against Paolo Banchero. They basically said, you're not getting all the way to the rim. Well, you're going to have to give it up. You're going to have to take contested tough shots in the paint. And that's going to make it really tough on him. And then I think the next challenge was with the Magic, as you mentioned. They just don't have enough shooting and enough shot creation. And it's only getting worse with Jalen Suggs out now, so we'll see what that looks like. If that turns out to be anything serious, the Magic's chances of making this even a long competitive series go way down. They need them on both ends of the floor. They just haven't had enough, so we'll see. And this whole year, Franz Wagner has taken a dip, and I don't know what's happened. I don't know if he's tired. This guy really hasn't had any kind of off season since he got into the NBA between Eurobasket and then the FIBA World Cup. He's going to have the Olympics this summer. So at some point, the Magic are probably going to have to do what they can to spot this guy a little bit of a rest. But his jump shot has gone completely missing in action all season long. And that's just made it really tough on them.
Yeah, sometimes when guys go to FIBA, they get better and they take that into the next year and excel. He's definitely taken a step back. In terms of what the Magic do in the offseason, obviously they've been linked to Klay. I don't think that happens. I think Klay probably stays in Golden State no matter if they offer him even a couple of bags of potato chips and like $1 million per year because of the loyalty that he has. But they need shot creation, like you said. Who would be some of the other players that they would target to go out and shoot threes and create their own shot?
Yeah, it's really tough because the Magic under this front office group have not really been major players in free agency. They've preferred to do it internally and then add players who are like nice fitting role players around those guys in free agency. So I think we're not going to see them make a big free agent splash, but they may get active on the trade market. Having cap space can aid you, obviously, in making trades. I think a lot of it's going to depend on who becomes available. Some people have said this is a fun series because if Orlando could knock Cleveland out, could they make a run at a guy like Donovan Mitchell? But the problem with that is he going to want to resign there long term? They're not going to do anything that isn't a this guy's here for the next 4 years or so type of move, because they're just not going to go all in like that. So I think you may see them look at it as, all right, we took our step forward here. Now what we're going to do is we're going to look in free agency at guys who are maybe undervalued type of players, guys who are good players, but nobody's going to be necessarily, you know, breaking the bank to get those guys. I think they could be a sneaky team to get in on a guy like Malik Monk. I think he'd be a great fit for what the Magic need, and I think he could play a huge role there. We'll see if guys like Buddy Hield or Gary Trent Jr. get priced out or let go, where they're at. But I'm with you on Klay Thompson. I just, that doesn't scream a move that this front office would make.
You know, it's funny, Keith, when you mentioned Donovan Mitchell and the offseason and the Magic, we just know what's coming this offseason. It's going to be Donovan Mitchell rumors. It's kind of been that way, whispered a little bit, and it's starting to get louder and louder. How far does this Cavs team have to go to quiet those rumors, or does that not matter at all at this point?
I mean, if you take him at his word, they have to make it to these finals. He said, I want to be in the conference finals or the NBA finals. I think there is a world where if they could be competitive with the Celtics in the second round and they lose in six or seven games, but they're kind of right there, maybe he does look at it and say, you know what, maybe the best thing is just re-up here, keep growing with this group, and keep getting after it. But I think if they're, it's looking like they'll probably beat Orlando. We'll see what the Magic can do. A lot of times, you know, it depends on what happens when you get back home and those kind of things. So, but if they lose to the Magic, or they're like handled with ease by Boston, I do think you're gonna have Donovan Mitchell kind of say, all right, hey, I didn't pick to come here in the first place. Let's look at what my options are. And if he turns down any kind of extension, if you're Cleveland, then you're on borrowed time, and at that point, you got to start looking at a trade. You cannot let him walk for nothing, because he's the kind of guy that teams will spend a chunk of the year lining up to have cap space to go directly sign without playing some of the other games, like signing trades and those kind of things.
The rumor is that he wants to be in New York. Doesn't make sense, really, with the Knicks, considering that Jalen Brunson's right there. And if he was to be on the Brooklyn Nets, he's not going to be anywhere close to competing, Keith.
Yeah, completely agree. And because of who he is, Miami will get involved. The Lakers will get involved. They get involved on anybody who's a star. They're going to be connected to him. I'm not going to go super far with he doesn't make sense on the Knicks. There's a world where you could make him and Brunson into a workable backcourt if you had the right kind of defenders in the front court. They've got like Robinson and Hartenstein work, and Anobi will work. For me, that would probably mean you got to move on from Julius Randle and get somebody who's a little bit more defense focused, help cover for Mitchell and Brunson where you need it. But yeah, it's going to be very fascinating to go. Maybe a team like Orlando does jump in and say, hey, we'll just jump in and figure it out. It hasn't been their MO, but sometimes in the NBA, these trades come out of nowhere.
What did you think about the Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Phoenix Suns and that matchup? Because what we saw earlier on in the season was Ant Edwards was held to like 14 points per game against the Suns. Rudy Gobert was like a minus 25 when he was on the court. And everything flipped once they got into the playoffs. We saw Ant Edwards arrive, and the Phoenix Suns offense came to a screeching halt.
Yeah, I thought he was extremely aggressive, but in a controlled way. I thought there were times in the regular season where he would, instead of accepting the double teams, it would be, I'm going to try to beat these double teams. And they resulted in turnovers or him taking four shots. And it was just kind of a real mess. So I think that was a interesting kind of look at things for him going forward, because what he was able to do in game one was, I'm going to attack before the double can get there. And when the double comes, I'm going to get off the ball, but then I'm going to recycle very quickly to get the ball back. And asking for a double, then followed by another double, that's just a hard thing for a defense to execute. And the Suns, let's face it, they're not a great defensive team. They get by on scheme more than talent. And there's only so much Frank Vogel can do. So I thought he played great. I thought Rudy Gobert did a really nice job, especially when he took his turn against Kevin Durant. I thought Karl-Anthony Towns, I wrote before the series started, he has to give as good as he gets in this series, meaning if he's going to give up 20 points because of mismatches, he needs to go out and score 20. He was pretty close to even with that. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker was the guy who stepped up off the bench, where he was the best player off the bench for either team. It gave them a bunch of energy, some really, really good defense against Booker and Beal, and that was huge too. So I think Minnesota, I think they heard everybody saying Phoenix has their number. Phoenix is going to beat them, and they came out very focused and ready to go.
Talking to Keith Smith, BetMGM tonight. Speaking of a team that has another team's number, at this, are the Lakers ever going to win a game against the Nuggets again? It's just, you want to talk about a team having their number. You just watch the Nuggets, no matter what the situation, they always find a way to beat this Lakers team.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is what the Nuggets do, right? They get into the last couple minutes of the game, really the last 5-6 minutes of the game, and it's like Jokic and Murray and Gordon and the rest of them are like, okay, it's time to win. Let's stop playing with our food here. And then the next thing you know, they're up 10, 12 points and the game's really over. And you're like, this was a close game, but now it's finishing like it isn't. That's just where they're at. There's a world where I want to say, yeah, maybe the Lakers get one if the Nuggets are up 3-0. But I think Denver's also learned the value of don't mess around. Close out series when you can. Get them finished. So I didn't have super high hopes going in. I picked Nuggets in 5 just because I thought the Lakers might get one somewhere. But yeah, they're going to have to really figure some stuff out with these guys.
Got about 45 seconds, but Trey Murphy, excellent for the Pelicans. What do you think about this matchup with OKC? This feels like it could possibly go 7, no?
I think it's going to be really competitive. I think I like OKC to win the series. I wish Zion was there, obviously. I think that would make it a completely different series. But I think OKC is going to get what they need a little bit more. They were able to find some better shots than New Orleans was. And I think that made all the difference, especially down the end. And Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, Herb Jones, great defense on him all game long. But SGA still got the bucket when he really needed one.
There he is, Keith Smith, our guy. Great to have you on again, man. Appreciate it.
Good stuff,
I appreciate
Keith.
It. Thanks so much for having me.
That's all the time that we have for this episode of the Heat Check. Come back tomorrow for an all-new episode as the first round of the playoffs progresses. And check out the feed for past episodes and mini-episodes which drop unexpectedly, like a fall-away jumper from Jamal Murray with no time left. What a shot. Do not forget to follow the Heat Check as we head into the playoffs. Continue down the playoffs. That means download. That means subscribe. That means tell your friends. Even Anthony Davis, tell him, hey, you need better than a 5% usage rate in the fourth quarter, my man, and when you're resting on the beach in Cancun, throw on the Heat Check on your AirPods. Just skip the episodes talking about the Lakers, and do not forget to follow us at this Heat Check and at Tristan Crick on TikTok, Twitter, and IG, and at some point, I promise, YouTube!
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.